Blog Talk Radio.
You got to listen to the Bob Carson Show. It's about the real deal. And this is Les Leopold, the author of Runaway Inequality, An Activist Guide to Economic Justice.
Hi, this is Stuart Acuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
I'm Andrew Craig. I'm an investigative reporter and attorney based in Washington, and I've the author of Presidential Puppetry, Obama, Romney, and Their Masters. And I want to encourage everyone to support, listen to, and talk about the Carson's Corner show in New Jersey, which is a pioneering, courageous, and apt voice for progressives in New Jersey that I first came to know in 2009, when he was the pioneering and virtually unique media outlet willing to take on Chris Christie, dig deep, and look at how he had come to power and how he was misusing it. And 4 years, 5 years later here, that's all come to pass.
Hi, this is David K. Johnston, and you're listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
Hi, this is Harry Kaysen, member supporter of the Zeitgeist Movement. As Zeitgeist members, we know that it is virtually impossible to find sources in the media that speak truth to power. Well, Carson's Corner does just that, and it is one of those special places where you can find out what is really going on. Not just what the bosses want you to know and think. So listen in and hear some truth at Carson's Corner. And oh, by the way, be sure to check out all the Zeitgeist and Zeitgeist-related films you can find on YouTube. We've got a world to save.
This is Greg Palin, reporter for BBC Television and Democracy Now, and author of the new book, Vulture's Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores. And you're listening to Carson's Corner on 5:30 a.m. Underground Progressive Radio, radio for the 99%. Help us occupy the airwaves and support Carson's Corner and support 5:30 Underground Progressive Radio.
Hey, this is Frank Schaefer, author, writer, New York Times bestseller. But I'm here today because I've got a new book called Why I'm an Atheist Who Believes in God. And I'm also on Carson's Corner because corporate media is so one-dimensional in terms of the kind of things they cover that they couldn't comprehend a discussion that would begin with a statement that implies a huge paradox. But I think there's a lot of thinking people out there who understand that life is paradoxical, and Carson's Corner is one of those places you can discuss it. So thanks for being with us.
Good evening, listeners, and welcome to Carson's Corner with the Election Boycott Advocates. This is your co-host, Chris Driscoll, and along with me tonight, we have Bob Carson, our illustrious show founder, and we also want to introduce to you a new member of the cast, Rainer Shea. Rainer has been on the show a few times, so regular listeners will always be already be familiar with him. He's stupendous. He's really a great example of his millennial generation, let's call it. He's a real socialist leader. Marxist-Leninist, a great writer, reporter. His articles are must-read, I've got to say, and people should be listening for information at the end of the show about how you can read some of Rayner's great articles. And he's just an all-around a great political analyst, and we're going to be welcoming him to the show on a regular or at least semi-regular, I don't know, we're still shoring that up, but basis, and like to welcome him aboard. So Bob and Rayner, hello, how are you?
Hello.
Wow, this is, I'm pleasantly surprised. I wasn't sure, you know, with what was going on with you, Rayner, considering all the Facebook things that were going on with you.
Yeah, that's really a new routine for me. Facebook kicking me off there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
we should definitely do a segment pretty soon on Facebook's fascistic approach towards social media. It's really bad. But anyway, how are you guys otherwise?
Oh, I'm eager to enter the 2020s, which I believe will be a turbulent decade filled with progress
definitely.
For our movement.
Yeah, definitely. Bob?
Yeah, I am doing well. Working, you know, just got a new car. Two new cars. I had to return one of them because it wasn't the right payment, and this was high interest rate as some of us working class are used to, and
right.
I had to get another one today. Just so busy and you know, to the grind. You know how it is, Chris. It's
yeah.
the same for last
well,
week,
after
four
that
years, so.
terrible crash last
yes.
month. I was surprised you even got out of there with as little damage as you did, but there was some damage. I mean, a lot of damage to the car, but a little to you. So
I don't think that's correct because I just took had a nerve test. It's called an EMG, and there was actually substantial damage. So.
Damn! I didn't know about that.
That's a whole other ball of wax. You know how that is, Chris. I'm sure you know.
We're going to have to keep track of that, Bob. You'll have to let us know the progress there. That's a terrible kind of a injury. So.
Yes.
But at least you'll be driving in a new car, huh?
Yes. Thank you.
Yeah. So anyway, the first topic on the discussion list tonight, Trump impeached. Donald Trump became the third president in American history to be impeached. He was impeached by the House of Representatives yesterday, and for those not in the know about this procedure, once a president is impeached, he must stand trial in the Senate, and the Senate will try him and either acquit him or convict him. The way it stands right now, the president or whatever the hell do they call him, the leader of the Senate, Mitch McConnell, there it is. It came to me finally. My brain's having brain burps today. Anyway, Mitch McConnell is demanding that Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the House, delivered the articles of impeachment to him in the speediest possible manner. because obviously Mitch McConnell is hoping to hold a very speedy trial, which will, he hopes, end in an acquittal, and that'll be the end of it. Nancy Pelosi, on the other hand, is threatening to withhold the articles of impeachment possibly until next July, you know, so that it would end up coming right in the middle of the Democrat and Republican conventions. So she's hoping to excise the ultimate amount of pain to the president and to his party through this process. So it's going to be a tug of war here to see actually when these articles of impeachment land on the Mitch McConnell's Senator Mitch McConnell's desk. And my bet is that Nancy Pelosi will be able to drag feet on this and make it last a long time. Meanwhile, the two articles of impeachment, there are only two, despite the fact that this is a mass murdering criminal who has literally deliberately targeted and murdered tens and tens of thousands of innocent civilians around the world in his multiple imperialist wars, a war crime tens of thousands of times over, a war crime under international law, under American law as well, to deliberately target civilian populations and to murder them with drone strikes and with jet fighter strikes and bomber strikes, which is exactly what this evil man has done, and which every single other president of the United States since FDR, and including FDR, did. So all of them should have been impeached and sent off to The Hague for war crimes, for a war crimes tribunal. But, of course, that's not what has happened, because in the world today, these mass-murdering criminals get away with it. But that's not what he's being impeached for. What he's being impeached for is one count of obstruction of justice, or obstruction of Congress, I'm sorry, and one count of, how did they put it, one count of, let me see if I can get the actual, give me a second here, and I'll get it. Here it is, one count of abuse of power. The whole thing that people know about with Trump supposedly, allegedly, withholding federal aid, military aid, lethal weapons aid to the fascist government of Ukraine until the government relented and started a investigation into the crimes, the abuse of power crimes of Hunter Biden and his father, Joe Biden, currently, right now, this very minute, speaking to the nation in a Democratic Party presidential nomination debate. So, anyway, those are the two counts. Kind of flimsy, if you ask me, although I am positive that, yes, Trump did indeed do this quid quo pro withholding of lethal military aid. And I'm just as convinced that Joe Biden, when he was Obama's point man on Ukraine, did exactly the same thing, except he was not demanding an inquiry into corruption. He was demanding that an inquiry stop. He was demanding that they stop an inquiry because it was actually the same inquiry. It was an inquiry into the criminal activity of Hunter Biden in his role on the board of directors of, what's that thing called, Bob? Bishima oil gas company.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm blanking on the name right now. Bishima, something like that. Getting it wrong. I know I'm slashing the name, but I'll get that for you later. Anyway, so the same thing that Joe Biden did, and nobody blinked an eye, and he even went on television and boasted about doing it. Now they're trying to impeach Donald Trump for. Well, perhaps there should have been two impeachments. Perhaps there should have been an impeachment several years ago of Biden for this same crime, if they say it's a crime. Anyway, meanwhile, both Biden and Obama in their in the Obama-Biden regime and the current Trump regime, they're both guilty of much, much greater crimes than this, but this is the one that they chose to go with. So, Bob, Rainer, maybe we should give Rainer the first hit here. What are your thoughts, Rainer, about this impeachment?
Caitlin Johnstone wrote in a recent article titled "The News Churn Memory Hole: How the MSM Lies Even When Telling the Truth." In this article, Caitlin wrote that it is a fact that far more news media energy is going into one trivial aspect of an impeachment agenda that will with absolute certainty fail to remove Trump from office than there is for the known fact that the U.S. government fought to suppress indisputable proof that American officials have been consistently lying about an 18-year military occupation which continues to this day. This fact should, by itself, be sufficient to completely discredit the mainstream press. That's a hot take from Caitlin.
Yeah, Caitlin's a wonderful reporter also, a wonderful journalist out there. Doing a lot of great work. We mention her often on the show. That's absolutely true. Absolutely true. Bob, what are your thoughts?
You know, I know we're going to talk about this a little later, but I got to agree with Putin on this, you know, as we usually do here on Carson's Corner. This is a political theater from a party that has lost the elections. This is the worst of what's going. We say this every week. This is the worst of what's going. This is the least troublesome of what's going on in the political arena, considering Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, the conflict of interest, pillaging of Ukraine and its resources, and just the outright corruption on the part of the Biden family. It's just absolutely disgusting. This is just absolutely nothing. And the American people, you know, say what you want about polls. The American people don't support removing Trump. They don't support this political charade, even though Donald Trump is the third president to be technically impeached. The American people aren't going along with this. It's not going to bode well for the Democrats in the 2020 election. And unfortunately, like Putin said, this is only a shape of things to come. And we're going to see this. They tried to link Putin to the Democrats or to Trump with the fake Russiagate hoax, and they're continuing. And I don't see the political upside for them. But this is what politics brings us in the system here. You know, constant, you know, fake, you know, political stories here, and we're in the midst of one. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot to be said for President Putin's comments there. And the other thing that Putin said that I thought was really great, you're right, Bob, this is getting a little bit into topic number two. Putin delivers annual press conference, because he talked about all this today at his big annual press conference. This is the pre-Christmas press conference that he does every year. And the other thing that Putin mentioned in relation to this is that this is really a reflection of a lot of political and social chaos in the United States right now. It's indicative of far worse. Rainer alluded to that in his comments about the 2020s coming up. I hope that next week and the following week we can do our traditional, we've done this every year, of do a show on the year that just went by, and then another show right before New Year's on the what we see in the year 2020 and beyond. So we'll be able to get a lot more into that, both into the world events where I think we're going to look back on 2019 as being a real watershed year for the working class, a watershed year for the eventual socialist revolution, the global socialist revolution. This year was really pointing in the right direction, and a lot of trouble because of that for the capitalist ruling class, a lot of trouble the capitalist ruling class are running into in any case. Their whole economic edifice is about very close to hitting the fan, so to speak. President Putin, I think, really hit the nail on the head there. And with your approval, you guys, I'd like to move on to the second topic. Putin delivers annual press conference, which happened earlier today, in the morning today. In that press conference, the press conference went on for more than 4 hours. I mean, Putin's trying to be the new Fidel here as far as giving long, long speeches, in this case, a long, long press conference, for more than 4 hours, and he hit on many, many different topics. Hit on, for instance, the relationships, both the military and economic relationships between Russia and China. Spoke about domestic economy. A lot of different things. As we just pointed out, this Trump impeachment, all kinds of different things. The one thing that I wanted to talk about, you guys can talk about some of the other stuff. There's a lot of interesting, a lot of important aspects of this annual press conference that took place, but Putin was asked about some of the statements he's made in the past about Vladimir Lenin, where Putin really blasts Lenin, I think mostly in an unfair way. Seems to believe that Lenin made really a lot of big mistakes that caused a lot of problems for the Soviet Union from then on. Now, the one thing I agree with Putin on is Putin, I think he said today and has said in the past, that Lenin, in a big political battle with Stalin, and this is kind of surprising. I agree with Stalin in this case, whereas almost 9 times out of 10, I am in agreement with Lenin against Stalin. But in this case, I have to agree with Stalin. But Stalin believed that the Soviet Union, when they were putting the Soviet Union together in 1922, there was a big fight over how much autonomy each national member of the Soviet Union would have. And Lenin believed in really almost total autonomy for the nationalities, for the nations, to the point where Lenin said that a nation should have the right to withdraw from the Soviet Union anytime it wanted to. Whereas Stalin believed that there should have been a lot more centralism in the Soviet Union. And I, you know, looking back on it, it's always easier, 2020 hindsight. I tend to agree with Stalin on this one and disagree with Lenin. I agree with Putin that it was, in the end, kind of a poison pill built into the structure of the Soviet Union that the nationalities were given so much autonomy. Lenin, of course, I don't think there was anything else he could have done, because Lenin preached the idea of national sovereignty. He preached the idea of the national right to self-determination, and he really strongly believed in that right to national self-determination. However, I think that he should have been looking at it more from the point of view of the Soviet Union was attempting to build a new nation, a supranation, a nation that pulled together hundreds of different ethnicities in a kind of a union where each ethnicity had equal rights and was protected by the umbrella of a strong central power and of a strong Soviet Union. That's my opinion. Apparently, that's President Putin's opinion, as expressed this morning. And it was certainly Stalin's opinion as well. I think that it's something that's well worth looking at, mentioning by Putin today, because Putin is attempting to bring some of these many, many diverse ethnicities together. And there are other kind of right-wing Nazi fascistic elements trying to drive Russia apart, and to drive Russia apart from the other nations that used to be part of the Soviet Union. So anyway, those are my thoughts initially on the press conference. As I say, it was a long press conference and filled with detail, lots of different issues involved there. So what do you guys think?
I'll let you go, Rainer.
Oh, well, you just dropped a lot of political knowledge that I hadn't encountered yet. It's like there's this whole socialist aspect of political history and debates that we're not exposed to as members, not initially exposed to as members of the bourgeois society. In school, we always learn about the American history and the American Constitution, but never about this this more legitimate form of government, which is socialism. So that was good to hear about the opinions you've assessed. Yes, I think it's reasonable to agree with Stalin over Lenin. If you care about the Soviet Union having really existed as a cohesive unit, I wonder what Lenin's reasoning was when he advocated for that. Did he assume that there wouldn't be a danger of bourgeois forces taking control of the autonomous states and undermining socialism within the region?
Yeah, I think probably, you know, Lenin was very optimistic about the future of socialism. I don't think Lenin took that into consideration. However, I think this was more of a debate along principled lines. I think for Lenin, the right of nations to self-determination was a trump card. It really was, something that beat out any other consideration. So that was Lenin's real consideration, whereas, Stalin thought that building a more centralized power was more important. Now, why Stalin believed that, I can't say right now. I mean, this comes from, in my brain, from reading I did long, long time ago on these kind of debates that took place in the early history of the Soviet Union. So maybe it's something we ought to, go back and take another look at these debates between Lenin and Stalin on the national question. It was certainly well documented. These were public debates. The Communist Party of the Soviet Union at that time was very open in this kind of a debate. So you can go back and read about it. Bob, I don't know if you have anything to say about on that issue, but I also wanted to touch on the what Putin said about China, Russia, the exact relationship between China and Russia.
I think we can move on.
Okay, well, Putin was also asked a question about whether the Russian Federation was considering a formal treaty with the a formal military alliance with China. And, of course, the Russian Federation does not have such an alliance right now. However, Putin said that there's no that neither side is looking towards that. That rather it's the American Empire. I mean, he calls it the United States. I call it the American Empire. But the American Empire that was looking for stronger military alliances between with Japan and South Korea and some of the other countries in the neighborhood, in that region, we should call it, that he saw as worrisome. You know, Putin thought that this region should not be divided by these military alliances. The Americans right now are trying to create a NATO-like alliance in Southeast Asia, and Putin really doesn't think that's the way to go. Putin also said that, of course, Russia has a very strong partnership with China. They look at China as a strategic partner, and that they will continue to, in that relationship, to help China to build up its military capacities. Specifically, Russia right now is helping China to shore up its defense systems against nuclear attack, early warning systems, that kind of thing. So Putin talked along those lines. And I think, Putin makes a really good point here that it's the American Empire that's trying to drive competitions into a military direction, just as imperialism, just as capitalism has always done. For capitalism, for imperialism, a military solution has always been the ultimate solution that they drive towards any time they run up against any kind of competition in the economic field. And, of course, Russia and particularly, specifically China, have become major competitive adversaries to the United States. That's the way the United States looks at them in the economy. So anyway, there you go. That's all I've got to say on Putin's annual press conference this time. There's a lot more of interest there, but to tell you the truth, I did not get a chance. I was only able to look at the summations that different news agencies put out about it. I wasn't actually able to listen to the entire press conference. I didn't have an extra 4 hours today to do that. So, anybody?
Yes. That's an intriguing subject, because we're seeing as the geopolitical situation shifts from unipolarity to multipolarity, and it seems like it's a good sign that neither China or Russia want to enter into a formalized military alliance, because that would indicate the presence of world war being imminent. But it definitely seems like there's definitely a cold war going on between Russia-China informal alliance, and between what remains of the U.S. NATO empire. I wonder what the situation will look like by the end of the 2020s. How powerful will the U.S. and its allies be? How much of a damage will they be able to still do at that point to their enemies?
Yeah, that's a damn good question. And you know, that's a good topic too for us to delve farther into in the next couple weeks and the next couple shows, when we'll be doing our year in review and our look ahead to the 2020s. Bob?
Yeah, I think we could move on. I don't really have too much to add to this. I think you guys did a good job. Other than to say, just in a general sense, I would love to see a official strategic alliance, a military alliance between Russia, considering the fact that the United States has strategically trying to obstruct Russia and China on so many different fronts for a number of different years. And that would be very, very symbolic of the world that we've talked about, this new world with new alliances that even our old departed friend Thomas Baldwin used to speak about so eloquently on this program.
Yeah.
So,
good point. Okay, with your permission, approval,
yes,
I'll move on to topic three, which is FBI crimes in the Russiagate probe. Now, this is pretty interesting stuff here. The gray zone, I'm sure you guys are both aware of thegrayzone.com. They put out an article by Matt Taibbi. And of course, Matt is the guy you usually see in Rolling Stone. He's like Rolling Stone's political writer. Seems to have taken on that mantle over the last few years. But anyway, his article that the Greystone published on the 12th of December is about the Horowitz investigation and the Horowitz report. Now, this report came out around the same time, about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. And it's on the FBI, basically criminal activity of the FBI investigating Donald Trump and investigating the Trump campaign. And Taibbi does a really good job, I think, of, you know, he proves, I think, quite well that the FBI used the Steele dossier, a document by a British spook that has been soundly debunked, that was commissioned by Hillary Clinton and the Clinton campaign and the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, basically dirt on Bush. And the FBI then goes and uses this phony document as a way to obtain surveillance warrants to actually spy on, surveil people high up in the Trump campaign in 2016, which is criminal in and of itself, to be using federal power to investigate one candidate in a federal election. That is basically a grave violation of the law. Anyway, Matt Taibbi does a pretty good job of, you know, exposing this kind of FBI deceit, this kind of FBI criminality. You know, apparently this Horowitz investigation, this Horowitz report, exposes that pretty well, too. Now, whether this will ever come to anything, I'm really not too sure, because, frankly, this, you know, this is an investigation that really exposes the FBI in a lot of criminal activity, and the FBI being used by one political party against the other, very similar to the Watergate thing, where FBI and CIA agents were being used against, you know, by the Republicans against Democrats, and to spy on Democrats during presidential campaign. So very criminal activity, and you know, Matt Taibbi's done a great job of exposing this stuff.
Wow. I remember some news about that last year. The Fox News called it Spygate, and I was sort of inclined to dismiss it, but Matt Taibbi is certainly credible.
Yeah, and apparently this Horowitz and the Horowitz report is pretty credible as well. That's a an official, you know, it comes from the government agency that is supposed to provide oversight when fishy shit is going on, basically. So I'm really hopeful that this will lead to, you know, a much bigger exposure of the criminality of the FBI, because the FBI, especially under the Obama regime, the FBI was really politicized. It was very obvious during the 2016 the way Obama was using the FBI that it was being used as a political tool by one political party against the other, which, you know, I think most Americans look at that as pretty damning stuff. It's the kind of stuff where, you know, it makes you wonder why the fuck Obama wasn't being impeached when he was president in the last 2 years that he was president. Why wasn't he impeached over this kind of criminality, as well as what he was doing in Ukraine, for an example, which was everywhere as criminal as what Trump has been doing in Ukraine, all over the same kind of shit. So anyway,
wow.
We've got a caller. I'm sorry, Rainer, did you have something else to say?
Well, just that Democrats claim Obama had no scandals.
Yeah. Right. Anyway, we got another caller here, a 574 number. Let's see what that's all about. Hello, 574 caller.
Hello. My name's Billy. I'm from Mississippi.
Billy.
And
Great to talk to you from Mississippi. What part of Mississippi are you?
Taylorsville, right there. Do you know where that's at?
No, never heard of it. Hydersville.
Taylorsville, right there.
Oh, I'm sorry, Tylersville. Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Okay, what are your thoughts, Billy? Yeah. Billy?
About President Trump.
Well, sure,
I'll tell you this. Before I voted for President Trump, I voted for President Obama. And after I voted for President Obama, you know what I did? I drove up to Washington, D.C. there, and I went ahead and drove up there, and I went to his inauguration for Obama, and I did.
Yeah.
And I drove up there, and they had a big old Ferris wheel right there at the White House lawn, and they were cooking out and everything and stuff. And I went up there.
So what do you think about this Trump impeachment?
Well, I don't believe he likes peaches anyway. He doesn't look like he eats a bunch of fruit. And it has to go through the Senate anyway, so it's not really an impeachment. It's just a bunch of hillbillies, sitting around in the House of Representatives there, and they're just sitting around. They're just throwing votes around, and they're just talking a bunch.
Yeah.
But nothing's going on.
Well,
happen.
It is a real impeachment. It is a real impeachment.
No,
impeachment, most people don't really understand what impeachment means. An impeachment is congressional indictment. So what that means is that the president has now been indicted. So that's what impeachment means. It means indicted.
No, I don't believe you understand the process yourself, is what I believe, is you don't get the process. He's not going to be removed. He won't be removed from
that's
office
for the Senate.
Until the
that's for
Senate
the Senate to do. That comes in the Senate file.
And do you think that's going to happen? No.
I'm not sure, but I'm leaning towards the idea that it is going to happen. But we'll see.
What?
Yeah.
How much you've been drinking today? That ain't going to happen. The Senate.
I don't drink,
all,
buddy.
Nancy won't even send it over. She won't send it.
Billy.
She's
Billy, anyway,
no, that.
Man, I don't drink. But anyway, thanks a lot for your call, Billy.
President Trump.
Yeah, thanks a lot for your call, buddy. Okay, so, Billy doesn't think that Trump is going to be convicted. He thinks that impeachment means convicted, but it doesn't. He doesn't think Trump is going to be convicted, so that seems to be the general opinion at this point.
He could have articulated that with some less loudness, but maybe it's just the way it sounded from my end.
I understand what you're saying. Okay, guys. Not finally, because we have a fifth topic that we're going to add in a few minutes about the. Another big report, the report on Afghanistan, the Afghanistan report, which we'll be getting to in just a minute. But before that, topic number four is British parliamentary elections. The British parliamentary elections happened on the 12th last Thursday. just about a week ago now. And I think for a lot of people it was a big surprise. Jeremy Corbyn was soundly trounced. In fact, in these parliamentary elections, Labour had the worst showing of any time at any time since 1935, since the 1935 elections. It was a really long time ago. Labour lost, I think, was more than 50 seats in the parliament. So whatever Labour did, they made some big mistakes. Now, my personal opinion is that that I'm pretty much with George Galloway on this. I discussed this last week. George Galloway discussed it at length in, on his show on Sunday, his show called The Mother of All Radio Shows. The idea that when the British, when the UK Labour Party conference last July voted to support the idea of a second Brexit referendum, which totally boxed Jeremy Corbyn in these elections. Corbyn, prior to that, was going with the idea that that Labour should support the first referendum and move on from there and try to get the best deal they possibly could in Brexit, get a good Brexit deal with the EU. But that boxed, that totally trampled on Corbyn's ability to do that. And I believe, and George Galloway, who's certainly much more credible than me, believes that Labour would have won had Corbyn got his way. You can look at this another way. This was the Blairites, the liberals in the Labour Party, sabotaging Corbyn's ability to get elected, sabotaging Corbyn's election chances. And they did, they succeeded. They did a very good job of that. They were never able to take Corbyn on head-to-head over policies. So they used this kind of tricky maneuver to maneuver Corbyn into a position that was untenable. The fact of the matter is that in the north and in the midlands of the UK, most working class people were in favor of Brexit, and that was the big issue in this election. Now, Corbyn did try mightily, in a really, you know, a good attempt to offer many socialist reforms that would have been really good for the working class, but apparently with the working class in the north and in the Midlands, they really wanted to solve this Brexit issue once and for all. And most of those people were pro-Brexit because they're anti-corporate. They're anti the corporatocracy, the billionaires who run their country from the EU. And that's what it really amounts to. Anyway, those are my thoughts on the election. This is really, in my opinion, it's done a lot of damage to Labour, and Labour is going to take quite some time to recover from this. And meanwhile, Boris Johnson is going to apparently going to get his Brexit by January 31st. And it'll be a no-deal Brexit.
Ah, that's dramatic. Well, what I think of this is that when we're thinking about Brexit in broader terms, from a communist perspective, Brexit in itself isn't innately a bad thing, because the EU is a capitalist institution that seeks to constrain countries under its influence from going socialist. So ideally, Britain would be breaking off from the EU to pursue a socialist development. Though that's obviously not the case, because you mentioned how the mentality of pro-Brexit voters is really that they hate the corporations and financial elites behind the EU, but the option that they've been presented for shaking off the EU, the Conservative Party and Johnson, they represent false consciousness. That's the Marxist term for when someone is led towards liberal or reactionary beliefs and put under the belief that they have all society figured out, that they're standing up to power, when really pretty much all that these voters did for their material conditions was make them worse and help the billionaire class in their country. So we need to, I mean the British socialist movement needs to pursue Marxism-Leninism, not just Corbynism, which is social democracy. The communists in Britain need to take the initiative, and they might be able to even take advantage of the defeat of social democracy, and try to rally the dispossessed people in Britain towards actually taking power into their hands.
Well put. Well put,
yes, sir.
Turner. I agree with you 100% there. Social democracy, even at its best, is really, really bad for the working class, ultimately. I was not very confident after looking, especially after July, I was not very confident that Corbyn was going to win. I have a couple of friends that I used to live with who were British, and, of course, they were all, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread, Corbyn's going to win. And I kept saying, look at Corbyn, he's like 10 points down. He was 10 points down, and in the end, he lost by more than that, all these friends of mine from Britain were, Corbyn, remember the polls were really bad in the last time, the youth came out and blah, 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 blah. I was just not confident at all. And I wasn't confident mainly because I listened to George Galloway's the mother of all talk shows every Sunday. And I don't just look. I look as well, because they have it on video as well as audio, so I get the chance to see George Galloway. And, I mean, I don't agree on everything with George Galloway. He's also a form of social democrat, but he's just a smarter social democrat than most of them. He had been advising. He's been close friends with Corbyn for decades, and he had been advising Corbyn on this Brexit, and Corbyn had been listening to him, but once the Blairites were able to get this poison pill thrown in the last Labor conference, that was pretty much the end. And Corbyn said right then, George Galloway said right then and there that Corbyn was going to lose, and I had to agree with him. It was just the objective lay of the land. So, anyway, ultimately, we need to push for the idea that this electoralism and especially electoralism in the form of social democracy, which is what the Labor Party is, is a failure for the working class. It's like a 100-year experiment, more than a 100-year, but basically a one-century experiment that has been an utter failure for us, and we need to leave it behind. Revolutionary socialism, communism, the Marxist-Leninism, those are the ideas that we need to look towards. Ultimately, socialist revolution, organized towards socialist revolution. Absolutely, Rainer, I agree with you 100% on that. And that is really what, you know, the British need. There are political parties in Britain that push towards that, but, you know, it makes it a little tough when there's a Labor Party or a Social Democratic Party, because that's okay. always a pretty strong draw for at least part of the labor movement, at least part of the working class. They want to go for those easy reforms, you know, that they think are going to be
okay.
easy, but in fact they're not.
Yeah, same thing.
I think we're going to move on into more than an hour today because we had added that extra fifth issue that the that Rainer suggested today, a very good topic, the Afghanistan report. So we've got 2 hours. I always leave 2 hours, or you know, I always add 2 hours for the show in case we need to move on. So there's no problem there. People should just stick with us as we move on. We're going to, I don't know, anything else you guys want to comment on the British parliamentary elections?
Well, I'm comparing it to the situation in the U.S. where liberalism has been enabling the rise of fascism, and the center can't hold, and the centrists in entities like the Democratic Party and the Labor Party, they're at least in the core imperialist nations, they're really succeeding at pushing out the social democrats like Sanders and Corbyn. So Britain, like much of the rest of the world, is heading closer to fascism, and it is, so it's going to become more and more apparent in the coming years that revolution is what needs to be pursued, not electoralism.
Yeah, the only answer. Revolution is the only answer. I have always felt that the UK was more fascistic leaning than the United States. It would take me way too long to get into all the reasons why I think that, but you know, I definitely agree with you that you know, there are fascistic elements even in the Labor Party, which is supposed to be a workers' party, you know, built on the labor movement. That's a much broader topic that I'm willing to get into right now. First of all, I'm not prepared for it, and second of all, you know, I don't think we're going to have the time to deal with that tonight. But it's, you know, it's a topic we should look at in some future date, maybe some special show on the ugly face of fascism and how it's rising in different parts of the world. Anyway, on to the fifth topic. This will be our final topic. This one was suggested by Rainer. And really good, and Rainer pointed to me to a great article on Truthdig about this. The Afghan papers confirm America's longest war is a lie. And this it's a story that originally appeared in the Washington Post detailing a special inspector general for Afghanistan. Pardon me? Sorry, Bob, did you say something? And Bob must be talking to somebody else. Anyway, Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction, SIGAR, a federal government watchdog agency that interviewed hundreds of officials about their honest assessments of the war. It's a really important government report come out, important articles about this. This article in Truth Dig is by Sonali Kolhatkar, probably not saying her name properly, but hopefully I got it. She's a columnist for Truth Dig, and she wrote a book in 2006, Bleeding Afghanistan, Washington Warlords and the Propaganda of Silence. It was published by Seven Stories in 2006. So she knows of which she's talking about. It's a great article. Look for it in Truth Dig. It was published on December 12th, which is last Thursday, 2019. The Afghanistan papers confirm America's longest war is a lie. Truthdig.com. Now, Rainer, I'm hoping that you'll elaborate on what I've said. I've just given a little bit, brief introduction to this, but this is something I think you've got a little passion for, so maybe you can start us off with a little bit more elaboration.
Well, one part of the article says that the Afghanistan papers reveal that officials privately knew they were fueling corruption and that, quote, much of the money ended up in the pockets of overpriced contractors or corrupt Afghan officials, while U.S.-financed schools, clinics, and roads fell into disrepair if they were built at all. So, stuff like that, the level of corruption that's been involved in the war and the lack of success of so-called American nation building in Afghanistan has been systematically covered up throughout these 18 years, and basically the point of the article is that the opponents of the war have been right all along, and in all their criticisms, the facts vindicate it. You might have mentioned it, but how exactly were the Afghanistan papers revealed? Is this a whistleblower?
No. This is, I'll read it again. This is from the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction, SIGAR, a federal government watchdog agency that interviewed hundreds of officials about their honest assessments of the war. So that's the actual report to come out, and I think this is going to be just like the report we just talked about, from the report on FBI criminality vis-a-vis the Trump campaign in 2016. It's going to be the same thing. The Democrats are going to sweep this under the rug. Too many of the Republicans are like asleep at the wheel. They're not even, you know, acting as an opposition party in this case, even though they were basically in the opposition in 2016. So here again, this is something that's going to be swept under the rug, unfortunately, and it's something that shouldn't be. I mean, this is a government report showing that that America's longest war, this war that's been going on for 18 years now, is a total sham, that it's been a total sinkhole, And you know what? I'll go back to an idea that has been around for quite some time now. And that is the chaos, the idea that the American empire is deliberately spreading chaos throughout the Middle East and Central, South Central Asia. It's basically what they are trying to do is spread chaos. They're not even, I mean, in the past, the American empire and other empires operated on a kind of a plunder. You know, they operated on a plunder principle, the principle that you'd take other countries to plunder them, to steal their resources, to steal the labor of their people. That is the old way. The new way, apparently, especially in most of these multiple wars over the last two decades, has been simply to spread chaos. They don't really seem to want to build up a puppet government that will do what they want. They want to build up a puppet government that will spread chaos, that will spread corruption and criminality throughout these countries, so that they're basically, they end up as failed regimes. That's what these imperialists want at this point. You know, I mean, for the last 40 years in the Arab world, in the Muslim world, they've been attempting to do everything they possibly can to undermine secular socialist governments and secular socialist movements. And they've gotten to the point now where at one time, if you look back in my youth 50 years ago, most of these countries had either secular socialist governments or they had secular socialist movements that were quite large and powerful. You look today, and what's left standing? Syria, they're left standing. The Hezbollah in the northern part of Lebanon, they're left standing. You know, Iran, they're left standing, and that's it. And everybody, every other part of that of the Muslim Arab world is either under the thumb of the American Empire, of American imperialism, or they're basket case states. They're failed states, one of the two. I think that's what's really going on here. But, yeah, it's very interesting. I'm going to try to read the entire special report from the Special Inspector General for Afghan Reconstruction because I think it's really important to get through all this. Federal government watchdog agency that interviewed hundreds of officials, they're talking American and Afghan officials, about their honest assessments of the war. And what they all agree on is that America's longest war has been a total, total failure. Unless you look at it from my point of view, which is they want it to be a failure. They want Afghanistan to be a failed state.
Exactly. I don't know how much point there is trying to assess the motives of the imperialists because in terms of destabilization, the United States and its regime change operations and its coups have been creating widespread destabilization for many decades, just since the start of the war on terror, especially throughout South and Central America.
Right.
It's CIA, it's CIA wars, and the it seems like the the U.S. would ideally want a more stable Middle East, but in practice, the U.S.'s perpetual invasions and aiding of terrorist groups make that region unstable. I wonder what the Middle East would look like now if imperialism weren't a factor. It would be largely socialist, much more secular, so much more free and stable, and there would be so many problems not present. But that's depressing to think about.
Yeah.
This reality.
Well, this is a war. This is an ongoing war between the working class and the capitalist ruling class. It's that simple. You can bring it down to those simple terms. And, they've been winning for many, many decades. They've been winning since the late 1970s when Jimmy Carter first started this neo-liberal assault on the global working class. It's been going on ever since, and we lost and lost and lost. But we're starting to, especially that's why I call 2019 a real watershed year, because we're starting to make some real big gains around the world. Not always, not in every case. I mean, there are still these color revolutions plaguing us in places like Hong Kong and places like Ukraine, as another recent example. But we also have, a lot of really big, powerful working class movements coming out and challenging this power in many parts of the world, in Ecuador, in Chile, in Libya, many, many parts of the world that we've seen in the last year. So we've got that to look forward to look at and build upon as well. Anyway, Rainer or Bob, if you got anything else you want to say about this impressive report on the Afghan, called the Afghan Papers.
Oh,
no, it seems
well,
very, very good. It's going to be, if it's newsworthy and it's important, expect it to be buried. You know, that's why I don't really absorb the corporate media, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I brought it up because of Johnstone's observation about impeachment distracting us from the Afghanistan papers.
Yep.
It's an important point. They want to, this impeachment thing is gold for them. It's going to be a big distraction. You say impeach the president. I mean, most people realize that the president of the United States is the most powerful single human being on the face of the planet. And when you start to say impeach the president, that has ripples and repercussions, and it gets in people's heads, and it makes people forget all the other important shit going on, like these two big government reports by watchdog government agencies in the last couple weeks. The one on the FBI's criminality and the other one on the America's failed war in Afghanistan, America's longest war. That's what they're all about. They're trying to distract us. So it's up to people like us to drag the attention back to these kind of important items. So anyway, guys, I think we had a great show tonight. Went a little bit longer than we have in the last several shows. We've been keeping it to an hour the last several shows, but we're going on an hour and 20 minutes now. And, you know, I want to thank you both. We had a great discussion, I think, and covered many important topics. And hopefully people will tune in again on Monday for our next show. Bob, you want to leave people with some information on where they can go for more information?
Yeah, go to our website, electionboycott.weebly.com, electionboycott.weebly.com, and visit our Facebook page. Just type in electionboycott advocates on Facebook. And our usual time on Blog Talk Radio. And hopefully Rain or Shay can join us every Monday. Make this a regular thing here on Carson's Corner. That'd be great.
Yeah.
And Rainer, do you want to let people know where they can go to catch your articles?
You can catch them on rainershea.com, rainershea.com, or on my Medium profile.
Great. And also, I usually find them on Dandelion Salad, Lo Daniels' great site. She seems to really be on the ball on picking up all of your articles and aggregating them with all the other important stuff. So people should look there. Anyway, guys, it's been a blast. Rainer, hopefully we'll talk to you on Monday. I'll send you more information about what the show will be about. Bob, you too. As always, a great pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And so long to all of our great listeners.